Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for the Social Hour is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur. Episode 36, recorded Monday, November 28th, 2011. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 20% off your new account for 6 months, go to Squarespace.com and use the offer code SOCIALHOUR11. And by Ford, featuring available sync with My Ford Touch. Sync with My Ford Touch gets you to your destination with integrated turn-by-turn directions and directional arrows displayed on screen. Check it out in the new 2012 Ford Focus and at Ford.com/technology. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of The Social Hour at TWiT TV's Petaluma headquarters at the Brick House. I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur from Toronto, Ontario, Canada.
How are you, Amber?
Good. How are you doing, Sarah?
I'm very well, thank you. We just got off of a long weekend here in the U.S. It was Thanksgiving weekend. So the TWiT team was lucky enough to get last Thursday and Friday off. Yeah, I mean, it's the first four-day weekend, well, probably since last Thanksgiving weekend. It's unusual to get a Thursday and a Friday off, but I had a really good time, and it's nice to be back, but I think we're all dragging just a little bit.
Oh, I'm sure. It's never easy coming back on a Monday.
Yeah.
Especially after Thanksgiving and lots of eating.
Very true. I had quite a lot of food over the weekend. I was actually up in wine country and did a lot of wine tasting, which makes me very tired. And then I get hungry and then I have midnight snacks and it was a lot of fun. But yeah, hard to get back to the real world.
It is. I agree. Are you drinking coffee today, Sarah?
It's green tea. I had some tea before I left the house, so I didn't want to go nuts. But I felt like I did need a little something extra, which is good because we have a lot of stuff to get through on this episode of The Social Hour. The first topic, we've talked about this in the past quite a bit, which is YouTube's video editing option, and this applies to the internal video editing option that YouTube has that I think we went through a tutorial and we've talked about how they've made some nips and tucks and tweaks along the way, but there was a recent GigaOm article that was pretty much going over just the stats of how many people are actually using that built-in YouTube editor to enhance their videos, and they mentioned the I'm feeling lucky feature of the YouTube editor, which made me say, wait, what? I'm feeling lucky. That's for Google search. You know, that's for when you're searching for a topic and you sort of want Google to put together some of what it thinks are your best options on a front page. But if you actually go into, I'm logged into my YouTube account and I really don't actually upload a lot of videos to YouTube, but I have a few here. And I thought, okay, well, if I wanted to, let's go ahead and I'll start from scratch here. So here are all the videos I have to choose from, and here's where I would drag them into a timeline, and this video that I took of my cats licking each other's heads. Okay, you know, the video is fine, but let's say I wanted to go into my effects editor, which you can get just by hovering over this here, sort of the little magic wand. Here's my effects editor. So here's the video. Okay. Well, that looks okay. And, you know, if I wanted to change it to black and white, it'll show me in real time how that would look different. I don't have a particularly colorful couch, so it doesn't look too different, but, you know, it's a little bit different. If I wanted to stabilize the video, I could do that. You can play with contrast and brightness, for example, but what's this I'm feeling lucky area? I never noticed this before. So what it does, it's a one-click option to kind of fix all-in-one the lighting and color, which is a little bit like the enhance button that anyone familiar with iPhoto knows. Now, as you can see, this kind of blue, it looks like it blew out my contrast.
Gross.
Oh, that's me talking about the video. I'll turn the audio down of me talking to my cats. How embarrassing. So this video is, you see a little bit of it did its best. It turned up the contrast a little bit, and this is a somewhat sunny day because I was right next to a window. So I don't know, maybe not the best use of I'm feeling lucky, but what it does is, let's say I was walking around and shortly after I shot this, I went into a darkened hallway. It would attempt, to the best of its ability, to stabilize the darkness and lightness filters, so that if you have a 2-minute video and it starts out light and then it goes dark, it would do its best to kind of regulate the whole thing. Now, of course, depending on the video, you know, if it was really bright to begin with, there's not so much brightness that I'm feeling lucky would do to enhance it. But it's a really nice feature. I had no idea it existed. Amber, am I alone?
Yeah, it's definitely new to me. In fact, I really haven't used their editing capabilities very much. I probably should take advantage of them a little bit more. I was super excited when they did announce them. But it's neat to see this little button over there that we all know, like you mentioned, from Google. So I think it's great for people who are new to video editing. I mean, we both know how expensive it can be to get a program like Final Cut Pro. So super excited to see them have something like this. And I'm sure, as the article mentions, it is already well used.
Absolutely. And speaking of, well, big numbers, 42.6 billion videos viewed in the U.S. alone for the month of October, which is a record. So YouTube has to be thinking, listen, people are taking this really seriously. We have to be able to give, I mean, yeah, it's not Final Cut Pro quality tools, but certainly tools that help people make that much better use of uploading video. So YouTube is thought of as actually a legitimate place to put content that is creative and well done. And you know, it's not just cat videos like stuff that I upload.
If I do, then
the color will be great.
In the first article that we were talking about, I thought it was kind of interesting. I think there was a place in there where they talked about the quality of YouTube videos and how the quality has been increasing so much over time. And there is some pressure to produce better videos that are, you know, cut together in a splashier way. And like you said, it's not just those simple little snippets we used to upload in 2005. You are competing with some pretty creative people out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Creative people. Speaking of those, Google Plus. We talked recently that Mark Zuckerberg, even though obviously the, you know, irony is not lost on us, was the number one followed. More people had Mark Zuckerberg in circles on Google Plus than any other person that was using the service. And then eventually he was ousted in the royal slot by Larry Page, which made a lot more sense, of course. Larry Page being CEO of Google at this point. But Larry Page didn't actually last as King of the Throne for very long, because as of last night, and somebody from CNET, I guess, was watching this really closely, Britney Spears joined Google Plus and is now in more circles than Mr. Larry Page is, which I guess was inevitable because she's also extremely popular on Twitter. And it was good for a chuckle, but I think to myself, these are the sorts of things that scare me a little bit about social networks. You know, Google Plus got brands, and I thought, okay, well, that's good for brands, but how good is it for the rest of us? And then you get the celebrities, where if you go to her Google Plus page, it's obviously very promotional, and we all have stuff to promote, certainly. I promote things on Google Plus all the time, and it's a really good venue for that. And Britney and or people in her camp would know that as well. But it sort of starts to feel like the tide is turning for Google Plus,
yes,
and all of the geeks, you know, that feel like we were there first.
I know. Once again, we get ousted, Sarah. Am I right when I'm looking at this screenshot of Britney Spears, how her little, I guess you would call it almost a tagline or profile description, says it's Britney, B-I-T, and then you can imagine the rest of it?
Yeah. Well, that's one of her... that's one of her... She says that at the beginning of one of her songs.
Oh, okay. I'm a little bit out of the loop here.
I know. Obviously, you didn't buy her last album, Amber. Wow, you're really missing out.
I did not.
You know, I would have said, huh, that seems like something that she wouldn't say because it's a little risque. But it is it's an authenticated account with Google. 774,202 people have Britney Spears in their circles. Now, what's interesting is that a lot of people that we know are in Britney circles. Kind of interesting. Huh. I wonder if I am.
That is interesting. She has a pretty big team, though, as I understand it, who are managing her social media efforts, right? I mean, I think I've read about some of the stuff they're doing. And in some ways, it was almost to sort of repair her image and get her out there more into the online space.
I guess so. Well, you know, you're looking at these posts. I mean, some of them are a little bit silly, but it's like, you know, 828 likes, 101 shares, 393 comments on a picture of, you know, a Britney ornament. Do your thing, girl. But sorry to Larry Page. He seems like he should be in the top spot. But then again, I guess it's not really about
the team Britney,
members.
Sarah.
Well, no, apparently not. Apparently
I
not.
I don't know. I mean, I know this is a show about social media, and I don't want to interject too much with my opinions on people like Britney Spears. I'm sure she is very talented. However, sometimes I just see some of these young women and the way they present themselves, and I think of all these little girls looking up to them, and it just, I don't know, it's not a good image to me, Sarah. I'd like to avoid it.
Yeah, so Connor's not going to be a number one Britney fan then.
I don't think so. But you know what, Sarah? I don't really know. What can I say? You know, I'm sure there are lots of Britney fans out there, but I think she should, you know, clean up her language a little bit.
Right. Especially on Google Plus. Dag nabbit. We do have some more news stories. It was sort of an all over the place morning for news, at least this kind of stuff that we would share on the social hour. So we do have more of those news stories coming up in just a few minutes. But we do want to remind you that we do record the social hour live on Mondays, 11 a.m. Pacific time, 2 p.m. Eastern time. If you're not watching us live, you should try because watching live is fun. We've got chatters who are chatting live and giving us live feedback, which is always really helpful. You know, you can send links or tell us what we're getting wrong or anything like that. But if you do miss the show live, that's okay, because you can always watch us on demand whenever you want, whenever's convenient for you. We have an audio feed too, if you prefer to listen as you go about your day, you have a long commute or you're at the gym or what have you. Website is twit.tv/TSH. It's where all of our episodes live. We're on episode 36, so you have a nice big back catalog of shows to choose from if you've missed any of them. And they hold up really well. I mean, some of the topics we, you know, talked about 4 weeks ago were brand new at the time, and maybe there's been time for the service to settle in a little bit. Maybe you're using it, so it's kind of fun to see what
we like
were talking
to be first,
about.
Basically.
Yeah, exactly. Back in the day. All right, so before we move on to some news, let's quickly thank Squarespace. They're our first sponsor of this episode of The Social Hour. Squarespace is it's the blogging platform that I use. I would never switch, because nothing's ever come along that actually works as well as Squarespace, in my opinion. A lot of other people agree with me, because really easy to use user interface. That's what puts a lot of people off of blogging. Sometimes people have a lot to say. They just don't like the design and upkeep factor of it. It seems daunting. It seems like it's a lot of work. It seems like something that you have to know code for. You have to be a good designer. Not true. With some other blogging engines, I think that used to be true, but not with Squarespace. They have templates. In fact, quite a few new templates. If you haven't checked some of their templates that will just get you started in a while, take a look, because they've added some really nice looking ones. But not just that to get you started. I mean, they've got a great design backend, so you can make little tweaks to your blog or your photography portfolio. I mean, when I say blog, it's sort of the most basic way to think of all the things that Squarespace has to offer. People use Squarespace for lots of things besides just sort of personal diary type stuff. Great Google Web fonts, CSS editing capabilities. If you are a tinkerer, if you think to yourself, I want something that isn't just for, you know, really, really, really basic noobs, Squarespace will work out great for you because it gives people an option to kind of go one way or another. Also, really good access. iPhone, iPad, and Android apps. So you can update your blog on the go. You can manage comments. You can delete stuff. You know, if you've got trolls, hey, I've been there. And the Android app is fully featured as the iOS app. So that's good, too, because I know a lot of people are Android users and they want to feel like they're recognized as well. Also, online resources. Support team will give you personal help 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I can attest to frantically asking them in the middle of the night, what have I done to my website? It doesn't work anymore. And they do get back to me. There really is somebody waiting to help you out on the other end. They have a really nice web interface to ask questions too, if you don't have anything urgent, but you need some questions answered. Flickr photos, form builders, a good import option from Blogger or Movable Type or Typepad. The list goes on. Squarespace is just quite simply the best It's the best blogging engine out there, and it's a lot more too. And we thank them so much for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. Oh, by the way, before I skip over the best part, if you sign up, you can do 2 weeks free. But if you decide to go ahead and give Squarespace a trial run, if you like it off the end of those 2 weeks, you get 20% off your first 6 months, which is the best deal that we've had all year. It used to be 10%. Now it's 20. If you use the offer code SOCIALHOUR7. It's all one word. Social Hour 7.
Hey, Sarah, I should say, I spoke at a conference last week at a university just outside Toronto, and the title of my presentation was You Are What You Tweet. And I was talking to students, and I recommended Squarespace because I really think when it comes to personal branding, if you don't know where to start to create your own site and have a blog and everything, it is just, it's probably the best destination and the best tool that you could use.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, it people can move around, I mean, the whole idea, Squarespace does this really well, too, where it will allow you to export all of your material, all of your data, if you decide to go somewhere else. But it does make sense to kind of have a destination and make sure people, you know, the URL stays the same, and they know that there's going to be new content there all the time. Squarespace is great for that. So again, squarespace.com, offer code SOCIALHOUR11 to get 20% off your first 6 months after your two-week trial. Make a Squarespace blog today. And if you're proud of it, you should send us the URL. Let us know. Let us know what you're doing with the templates.
Maybe we can give you some tips. I know when I was doing Call for Help with Leo, one of the most popular segments I did was called the Web Workshop, where we used to give tips on websites. So that's always fun. So we might be able to help out a little bit, Sarah.
Absolutely. Well, you especially, since you're good at that design stuff, much more so than I am.
All right.
Go ahead.
This is really interesting, Sarah. It's all good. So I know we're both excited to talk about this, and I'm just reading about it a little bit more. Follow real-time World War II updates on Twitter with @realtimeworldwar2. This is fantastic. So as far as I understand it, this is a former student from the UK in his 20s who started this site where you could tag along and get information about what happened in real time during World War II. He plans to tweet what happened on a daily basis, although of course that was back in 1939, but he's using the same dates today. He plans to tweet for 6 years to educate people about World War II, so it's quite a commitment.
This is so awesome. I read a, I think it was a New York Times article about it over the weekend, and many other people are just finding out about this Twitter account for the first time because it's starting to get some press. It's about 150,000 followers now, but I mean, that's skyrocketed from just a few thousand, not, you know, just a week ago. But the idea is it is a live tweet of the Second World War, World War II, because we're now in the date period where when it started back in 1939, there's enough historical, obviously, newspaper articles and documentation that there is something to talk about as if it was happening in real time today for years to come. I mean, for example, 5 hours ago, real-time WWII, that's the because it's obviously Roman numerals, on Twitter, that's the name of the Twitter account, overnight snow saved us from thirst, only food, condensed milk, and hardship's biscuits, but those with good teeth chewed, then passed on.
What an amazing way to teach people. I mean, I'm thinking particularly of students who maybe have to study World War II in school. And I mean, I think they would just find something like this absolutely fascinating. And here's a perfect example of Twitter, you know, done well, serving a purpose and teaching people at the same time.
Right. I mean, it's not only personal accounts from people who were in the war or making journeys, but obviously historical photos, newspaper headlines. I mean, it's just, it's such a good idea. And I hope that this inspires other people to use this for other world events. I mean, World War II is obviously very particular. You know, it lasted a long time and there's a lot of stuff to say about it. But I really like this idea. I know I follow a Twitter blog that's a woman tweets out recipes, and she's really, really creative about shortening everything so that, you know, she has her little codes for, you know, what sugar is or teaspoon or tablespoon type of thing. And I get a lot out of that because I think that's such a great gimmick for actually teaching me recipes. But this is on a whole nother level, and I really like it. So again, that's real time, WWII. is the Twitter account, Real Time World War II, live tweeting the Second World War. I've never seen anything like it. It's really
Me
well
neither.
Done. Yeah.
We should try to get him on the show. We'll bug him when maybe things calm down a little bit, because I know there's a... Everywhere I looked, I was seeing this article today, so it seems like I'm sure he's having a very busy day aside from updating the account on a regular basis.
Yeah, absolutely. Another big story, So here's what's funny. So Zynga is in a quiet period because they're almost about to IPO, which is, you know, traditionally what happens to companies. So, you know, no matter what is said about them, or, you know, a little sort of like controversy or snide remarks type of a thing, or rumors, they just have to keep quiet. That's just the way it goes. There's been a lot of news about Zynga over the weekend, and some of it you could say kind of snarky about how the culture... behind Zynga, which is a huge company. They're based in San Francisco. In fact, they employ more people than any other company does within San Francisco city limits. Employees around the world as well, that they, you know, they work their employees too hard. People leave meetings in tears.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I've heard of that of Amazon, too, to be honest with you.
You have heard of that about Amazon?
Yeah, I think it was also in a Bloomberg article that they were pretty critical of about how Amazon treated their employees. So hope that's not a trend.
Yeah, but so there's a Business Week article here that covers some of that a little bit. But also the idea that social gaming games, social networking games like Farmville or Mafia Wars, or I mean, I'm sure you can think of the more annoying game that, you know, kept popping up on your newsfeed because your friends were playing before you blocked it, or that you were playing because you enjoyed the games. Yeah, there really isn't, like, what's the big game now? I mean, Farmville is certainly still used, but there in Mafia Wars was, I blocked that right away because I felt like everyone I knew 3 years ago was playing Mafia Wars. Then Mafia Wars 2, which was an update, a sequel, came out to a lot less fanfare. And it's the sort of thing where it's like, you know, is that social gaming? I'm sure there will always be people who are interested in playing games on social networks, but seems like maybe the frenzy was a bit of a passing fad, which is scary for companies like Zynga because this is how they make all their money.
I know, but I think there is that factor, that annoying factor, like you mentioned, right? You know, you see all of your friends playing these games and you're getting updates, and it gets to the point on Facebook where it's just too much, you know, too much going on. And I think, especially with the popularity of apps and people obviously launching lots of really great gaming apps, I wonder what the future is as well. I would say that, you know, Farmville could be an exception to the rule, and they clearly did very well on that. So I'm not sure they're hurting.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. I've never really understood these games because they seem virusy because people, you know, it's like you have to post everywhere that you're playing. It's more fun the more people you get to play with you, and it's such a time suck. And I've just never really understood it, but I know that it's certainly something that, I mean, Leo was addicted to Farmville.
Oh, I know.
For a long time, and he said, no, it's really fun. I mean, you might say it's junk, but I actually get a lot out of it. It's really fun.
But I wonder,
I play
if
with
he still
my mom.
Plays.
No, I don't think so. Well, I'm not sure if he plays Farmville. I know that he eventually got over Wii Rule, which he was spending a lot of money because there's sort of buy-in and you get little prizes or virtual gifts or whatever. But it'll be interesting to see how social networking games evolve, and if a company like Zynga, which is about to IPO and make a lot of people a lot of money, I mean, are they going to keep that momentum going? I can't think of what the next Farmville is. I don't think there is one. I've never heard of a game that was a Facebook played game that even came close to how popular Farmville was.
My mom, one of her friends plays a game, and I cannot remember the name of it, but it's a Facebook game, and she literally like sits down and plays every single day. I'm going to have to find out what it is, but it's really popular among her friends. A lot of them play it. It's definitely not Farmville or Mafia Wars. It's something else, but totally hooked on it. It's so interesting, you know, to see people in their 60s on Facebook literally, you know, sit there in a few days, get kind of hooked on one of these different games. So it's a whole other market.
Mommy Esquire in our chat says, well, they keep releasing different versions. So there's Farmville, and there's Castleville, and then there's Cityville, and Web 1311 is suggesting Factoryville. I don't even know if that's a real Farmville clone or not, Factoryville, or if that's just your idea for the next one. But it's true. It's like these, how many, you know, it's like Pirates of the Caribbean. I mean, they just, the movies just keep getting worse every time they release another one. They get like,
and
less
we know
and less
you love Johnny
cool.
Depp.
So yeah, it's, and I do love Johnny Depp, but that last movie was terrible. I wanted my money back.
I watched it on a plane and I turned it off, which is very unusual for me because like you, I also like Johnny Depp. So it just wasn't great. Unfortunately.
No, it wasn't good. And a lot of these games, I'm sure people will have the same issues with. So we'll make sure that we're staying on the Zynga beat and seeing if people keep beating up on them while they're in their quiet pre-IPO period. Very interesting. It's interesting to think about, like, well, what would be the incentive for, you know, another company to leak out something about how Zynga is so mean to their employees. Well, you know, if you're a competitor, a direct competitor, another gaming company, for example, maybe there is some investment in that arena. So, interesting stuff. The cattiness does not, never stops.
Well, we see this. I mean, we saw this in the late 1990s. I'm thinking when I moved out to San Francisco and there, you know, there were lots of people, lots of companies doing really well and going public. And there was that website, FU, and you can imagine the rest of it, company.com.
Oh, yes, F'd Company.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I remember literally sitting there with friends when I was working at Razorfish and watching all these companies who had shut down, and there was this kind of satisfaction thinking that, oh, they didn't make it, you know, but maybe we will. And, you know, it's I think we're in almost that type of time again. You know, you see that with Groupon, Zynga, that are they sort of one-hit wonders? Who knows? Are they getting greedy? You know, I don't know. I don't know. I don't have the answer. But
and they're so new is that we can predict, but just no one really knows because this is social behavior that just wasn't even around 5 years ago.
I mean,
we didn't have Groupons 5 years ago even to know how this sort of thing is going to stand the test of time. It's funny that you mention F'd Company, which was, yeah, it was also a daily read. And I remember it was starting to really hit its stride just before, well, it was... I was reading it before I started working at Tech TV because I started at Tech TV February of 2001. But that was really when a lot of companies were folding, you know, like they were dropping flies. And we all would read and kind of go, interesting, because we were in the space. I mean, it was our job to talk about a lot of the stuff for Tech TV content. And then Tech TV showed up because we had had layoffs internally. And at that point, I was like, you know what? I'm not going to read this anymore because it's like I got what I paid, you know?
Like, it's true.
I got what was coming to me by sort of snickering about some of these other companies with bad business plans when it ended up being sort of an economical thing where a lot of people were just getting laid off.
Yeah, not good times. All right, Sarah. So this is an interesting story that you found on TechCrunch. Apple sucks at social. When I first read this, I was thinking they sucked at, you were saying that they sucked at actually doing anything in the social media world to really promote themselves because they really aren't present in a significant way. But it's sort of a different spin on that idea.
Yeah. So Alexei Totsis, who is a friend of Twit, she's appeared on This Week in Tech a few times now, wrote a post last night that certainly you could argue, and Alexei, I love you, but a bit of a link bait type of a title because I saw it on Twitter. And of course, I'm definitely going to click on something that says Apple sucks at social. But she did make some good points that... Apple has tried and arguably failed at a lot of the social media that other companies have been good at. Now, Amber, you make a good point that something like Find My Friends is really not a social media element. That's, of course, the app that now Apple includes with iOS 5, where Amber and I can link up, and then I can see basically wherever Amber is geolocated as long as she's got her phone or her iOS device on her, and vice versa. That's not so much of a social media, but it certainly is a social tool. Now, she says nobody uses that as an example. Now, I actually don't really use Find My Friends, although I do have it linked up. Leo and I have it linked up because sometimes if he's running late or if I'm running late to one of our shows, it's a really good way for him to be like, Sarah's on that part of the highway. She's got like 10 minutes to go type of a thing.
That's handy.
But that's a very specific case. I mean, there are very few people who care where I am, you know, down to the minute besides my live TV colleagues. But I know that there are other people who use it. So I don't know that it's fair to say, well, no one uses this tool, because I don't know that Apple is really in the business Ping aside, because Ping is obviously the beloved Apple social network that didn't go anywhere. It was still live, but people aren't really using. I don't think that they care so much about social networking because they're really a hardware company, in my opinion. What do you think, Amber?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I mean, I think it's one of those things, at least with Find My Friends, you know, like the article says, I think it's really relevant and really important for a lot of parents who want to be able to locate their kids. And if their kids are using an iPhone, it makes it really easy to make that connection. Yeah, it is a bit of a link bait in some ways, I think, with the title. And like I said, what I think is an even more interesting conversation is why Apple doesn't really play in the social media world at all as a marketer. I mean, I realize they don't have to. But also, I think it would open them up to a lot of criticism, and they're very tight-lipped, and that would go against that culture within inside the company. But no one really talks about that. So I think that would be an interesting discussion.
Yeah, I don't quite know what to make of it. I just don't feel like anyone at Apple is saying, gosh, man, we really suck at social. How can we be more like Facebook? You know, or how can we amass people in other people's circles the way Google Plus is, you know, it's like they're not, those networks are all selling advertising, you know, and the more viewers they have, the better. Apple's not doing that. I mean, they're selling iPhones and MacBook Airs, and I don't think they care so much. I mean, they're offering tools like Find My Friends as an example, or iMessage, where if I have an iPhone and you have an iPhone, we can SMS each other without actually using part of our texting plan. Again, it's sort of, it's as social as you want to make it, but it's not necessarily for the masses. It's for people who already use their devices, love them, and want certain perks.
Yeah, exactly. I think that definitely makes more sense. So I hope they don't spend too much time trying to tackle the social market, because I just don't think they're necessarily set up to do it. Like you said, you know, keep producing good hardware, and let's leave it at that.
All right, Amber, time for a social tip. This one's yours this week, something I've never done before. So,
yeah, this is super simple. For people out there who maybe signed up for Twitter a while ago and they don't love their Twitter username, or let's say that you started a job and you want to tweak it because you want to tweet on behalf of the company, it's really simple to change your Twitter username while still keeping your followings and followers. And in fact, I did this way back when I believe that I was initially using Twitter at Amber MacArthur, and I switched over to at Amber Mac, and I had to get sort of someone I knew within Twitter to help me do this a few years ago. Well, now anyone can do this within their Twitter account. You just go to your account tab on twitter.com. You can change your username as well as your email address and security settings. You can find what username is available. And then they recommend that you let everybody know who is already following you that you have changed your username, just so they're aware of it, even though they will still see your tweets. So just handy, you know.
So you don't have to worry about asking anyone to follow you again. That all just rolls over. But yeah, it is always nice because you get so used to seeing people's handles in your Twitter stream. Certainly if you use web Twitter, I mean, the Twitter handle is what's on display, and then you see the little name next to it. I know in some third-party apps you can change that based on the view you like. But it can be confusing when all of a sudden it's like, what? Who is this person? I don't know this person because they changed their Twitter handle. So it's nice to give sort of a courtesy heads up. It's still me. You're still following me. Our very own Chad has actually done this a few times. He started out as CrazyDude07, crazy with a K and two Z's. Not going to touch that one. To OMG_Chad to OMG Chad, all one word. OMG Chad, I think, is the best one. Oh, Chad. He says, thank you. He's not mic'd today.
What's going to happen now that he has red hair, though, Sarah? He's going to have to change his identity all over again.
I wonder if Ronald McDonald is taken.
Oh.
That would be good. Yeah, I have. All right. He's got red hair. He's asking for it. But no, that's a, it's very, it really suits him. And I don't think I could say that about many people with flaming red hair. But yeah, so that's how to change your Twitter handle. If you've ever wondered how to do it, is it going to mess things up, is it going to break links? No, it won't change anything. It's just as long as that the handle that you want to change it to is available. That's number one. Okay,
cool.
Let's move on to our weekly spotlight. This is a service called Munchery.com. Now, I've got it up on my computer because I got an invite code through a internet friend of mine, Britt Morin, who just launched her own sort of geek DIY destination, hellobrit.com. Where is it? Maybe if I just open it up here on my computer,
this
I'll still be
so
logged in.
Cool, and it's making me very hungry, let me just tell you.
Yeah, this is really cool. So Munchery is unfortunately only available in San Francisco right now, but that's sort of what they're in their testing phase. It's actually in private beta, although I was able to get an invite code again at hellobrit.com. So if you want to go over to her write-up about Munchery there and use her link, it probably work for you, or at least for a limited time. The idea behind Munchery is that it's Monday. I'm tired. I don't want to go grocery shopping. I don't want to eat out. And I don't want to do the takeout thing, because takeout often becomes pizza or Chinese food or something that's easy or just boring because it's close by. And so you want something that's of quality, but you just don't have time to make it. And you don't want to go out and eat. Now, I would say you could save money by using Munchery, but I'm not actually convinced that that's true. Because if we look at, let's look at the home delivery options for tonight, for example. I have a chef named Nicole Gimarallo, who is offering coffee-rubbed pork tenderloin with green chili white beans and red cabbage slaw. All natural. There's a little more information about that. You can see a little bit more detail on what she does as a chef, where she comes from, you know, her accolades on Yelp, if she's been rated on Yelp. But here's the deal. The meal's $20. So this is the sort of thing that, I mean, you might pay $20 at a rather nice restaurant for this. And if the portions are good and you love the food, you'd think, this is delicious. I mean, I'm really happy about this. So this is, to me, It's a takeout splurge. Now, they'll deliver it right to your house, and delivery's free. So I guess you could sort of consider that tip is built into that price. But I wouldn't call it cheap eats delivered to your door. I would call it gourmet eats delivered to your door. But I think in certain situations, I would use this. Amber, what do you think?
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, especially if you're having someone over for dinner. Imagine you were having someone over on a date at your house and you wanted to cook something up that was really fancy. I think it would be interesting. Now, I don't mean to be a pessimist, but the first thing that I thought of was, how do I trust what these people are putting in the food? And I know that's a terrible thing to say, but I'm guessing that maybe there was some type of vetting process from the company.
Yeah, I think that the folks behind Munchery are seeking out, and again, they're not even in, you know, they're in a private beta situation right now. So you got to assume that they're trying to work out kinks, or else that they would already be fully public already. But you can see Chef Remy Hayashi, who's offering chocolate chip cookies for dessert for $3 tonight. People have rated his past meals. Not only that, but he also is on Yelp, and that's something that Munchery is building in to their web interface. So that's helpful. And I think that as they continue to work with chefs, you're just going to kind of have to, and that's, I use Yelp more than I care to admit to figure out if I want to go to a restaurant or not. Still to this day, even though there are a lot of other tools, the hive mind aspect of Yelp is good. You know, if I know if something has 4.5 stars out of 500 reviews, more often than not, it's going to be a place that I end up liking because just so many people liked it versus maybe a few bad reviews that brought that average down just a little bit. So something like Munchery would definitely have to depend on that as well. But then again, the chefs aren't the ones who are delivering food to your house. That would be a separate person because obviously they're busy making food. And they have, there's some constraints. I think you can only get food delivered between 5 p.m. and 9 p.m. And that's, again, it would be local to however many cities they end up rolling out, but right now it's just San Francisco. But you could do group catering if you wanted more food at once. I like this idea. I think that, yeah, it's a once in a while splurge. I think a date at home is such a good idea, though. I hadn't even thought of that.
Yeah, that would be really cool. I think that that's where it would really fly. And then you would look like you actually knew how to cook, which is always a bonus when you're dating, Sarah.
Yes, it's true. I feel like I know how to cook. It's just, thank goodness I have someone who will eat my food, because half the time I try it, I'm like, this would never impress anybody. I would never bring this to a potluck. It's terrible.
I don't cook it at all. I'm the worst cook in the world.
Are you really? You don't cook ever?
Never. I never cook. Oh. Chris does all of the cooking. I don't cook at all.
So you do cook at home. It's just you are lucky enough to not have to be the one slaving away.
No. I don't know. I'm a really bad cook, I have to say. I always burn things and I don't take time. I'm always impatient. So it's best that I stay away from the kitchen and I always do the cleanup. So that's usually pretty handy. But Chris does pretty much all of the cooking. Like there's a couple of things that I can make, but mostly I stick to things where there isn't an oven involved.
Right.
That seems to be the safest thing.
Yeah.
Good thing I have someone there.
I think I just need to use more butter. That's my problem is like I put together these healthy recipes and they seem like they should be great and they're just terrible. I think I need more butter.
Yeah. It's probably better I don't see what's going on in that preparation.
Right. You say delicious. Another slam dunk.
Exactly. All right. So we have lots of feedback this week. Our first email is from Stephanie. She says, hello, Sarah and Amber. I was listening to episode 35 on which you read an email about roaming fees when going abroad. Here's my tip. My brother and I live in France and we are frequently traveling to the U.S. We asked an American friend to buy us a Virgin Mobile MiFi pay as you go. When one of us happened to go there, he brings the device and pays for 1 month so that he can have unlimited data. If we pay for a whole month, it's cheaper than roaming fees. If you have European friends, think about this for Le Web.
Oh yeah, because I'll be on my way to France on Saturday. Yeah. And I'm actually I have this issue right now because I don't even have an iPhone that will work in Europe currently on any sort of data plan because I'm still using the iPhone 4 and it's CDMA and I don't know what I'm going to do. But this is Stephanie or Stefan, I'm not sure since you are French.
Sorry.
That's okay.
Yeah, yeah, Stefan.
Yeah, we've covered our bases. It's one of the two.
Yeah.
But yeah, MiFi, definitely a good option whether you're coming to the States as obviously. Amber, do you ever use a MiFi when you come to the States? Because I know that you have, don't you have a separate phone where?
I do. I usually have a separate phone that I use in the U.S. So I usually, because I'm always testing different phones, so I'll usually have one that I'm working with someone who's given me a SIM card and, you know, is cool with me traveling with it and everything. So I'll usually swap phones out when I go there.
Right.
For the most part.
MiFi is a great example of a way that you can use data on the road, and then in many cases, more than one people can connect to it. So yeah, if you're traveling in a group, for example, this might actually be the best option that you have. If there are a few of you who are going to be needing to connect, and you know you're not going to be near Wi-Fi regularly, and you've got stuff to do. So yes, the MiFi options are, there are a lot of different plans, a lot of different carriers, so you certainly want to look up and see what your options are. But yes, thank you very much for the international roaming tip. It is a good one. The next question we got is from Edward, and this is actually a question that, Amber, you might be able to answer. I do not, so I say it's sort of a question for everybody, the hive mind here. Edward says, I'm part of a group of friends who built a solar-powered car that we raced across Australia in the World Solar Challenge of 2007. Very cool. In 2 weeks, we'll be driving the entire length of New Zealand, trying to set some records. And we've set up a Twitter account, Solar Fern, to keep people informed of our progress. We're looking for a way for a bunch of different members of our team to send SMS tweets to the Solar Fern account using different phones. The idea is that anytime people feel like providing an update, we don't have to coordinate it through a single person managing the Twitter account since everybody's going to be busy at different times. We can't use laptops. We can't use smartphones because we're going to be in very remote parts of New Zealand and sometimes SMS is just the only reliable communication method. Problem is, Twitter only allows SMS messages from one account from one phone. There's some service. Is there a service that collects SMS messages from several people and then channels them to one Twitter account so that they appear to come from a single phone? I've found connecttweet.com, but that requires everybody who wants to post to have their own Twitter account. We don't really want that. We just want to be able to use SMS to funnel into a single Twitter account. Do you know of any other solution that doesn't require our team members to sign up for something?
Well, I have the lamest solution in the world. Okay. Because I don't know what the right solution is. I would actually recommend that Edward and those guys put out the question to Twitter and see if it would be possible to do something like that. Otherwise, they could identify one person on the team who really was acting as a social media manager and just simply text that person the tweet so that they can update the tweets. And I know it's a lot of work for that one individual. Mm-hmm. So that's the only thing I can think of because of the tie-in between Twitter and one mobile phone for SMS messages. So if anyone else has an answer, really easy to let us know and we can share it on the show next week with Edward and everyone.
Absolutely. Sean Zero in chat is saying, I wonder if you can pull it off with Google Voice. Sean, I thought about that too this morning And I'm not, I can't figure out how that would work, because again, you can certainly attach a Google Voice number to an account to SMS Twitter, but you can't, I don't think you can attach a group of Google. Everyone would still need Google Voice accounts, I believe, that would just point to the same place. And I think that would be beside the point, because they want it to be as easy as possible. I'm not sure. If I'm missing something that would work with Google Plus, let us know, certainly. I also, Amber, I kind of agree with you that in a way, it can be good to have somebody, even though it would be a lot of work for the ringleader to manage that Twitter account. But in a way, it keeps things from getting out of control. I mean, what if 5 people SMS to the Twitter account the way that they want to, you know, 5 times in 5 minutes? That can be, you know, that can kind of put off. Sorry, what's that, Chad? Ooh, if this, then that.
Oh.
That might be a good solution. So how would we do this? You can send a text. Well, okay. So you can send it. You can. Could you have a bunch of different SMS numbers? Aha, okay, yeah. So this, ifttt.com, we've talked about this on a variety of Twitch shows, but certainly on The Social Hour in the past. This would allow any... No? Oh, because it goes through one of their numbers.
Oh.
Sorry, I'm thinking about this out loud. Darn it. So yeah, if this then that still has the same problem of they funnel through one of their own phone numbers. So yeah, it wouldn't necessarily work, because we'd confuse it if you had a bunch of different SMS numbers pointing to the same service. Somebody's got to have an answer for you, Edward. So we're certainly putting that out there. Whoever gets the answer first will get our undying adoration. but we definitely want you to be able to do what you want to do when you're on the road. It sounds like an extremely awesome project. And best of luck out there in New Zealand any service.
All right. So if you want to hear, if you want to send us a link or recommendation, if anyone has an idea for Edward, all you have to do is write us at thesocialhour@twit.tv, leave us a voicemail at 2626-SOCIAL, or record a video. Do not do this while you are driving.
No.
As much as we appreciate hearing from you, but just pull over safely and record a message. And then later on, you can upload it and send us a link and keep it nice and short and sweet and be safe.
Right. And you definitely don't have to be in your car at all, although that's fine. We love to hear from you. We love to see you, but you can be anywhere else. Yeah, if you keep it short and sweet, we'd be happy to play your video. Somebody else did send us a rigged up iPad in their car console, and he was watching us. So I just decided we're not going to fuel that fire. We're not. You can't do that unless you can convince us, you know, that you're sitting in your car for whatever reason for a solid hour, not moving at all. Then you can watch. Otherwise, don't do it. Okay, Amber, your Rad or Fad is coming up, but quickly, we want to thank Ford, because it wouldn't be a cool show without talking about some Ford technology. Are you familiar with how technologically advanced Ford is compared to all those other manufacturers? If you're not, let me tell you a little bit about some of the cool stuff that Ford is doing. Sync with My Ford Touch, which is the in-car communications. It's like Knight Rider, but in Ford's. So you've got entertainment, connectivity, voice activation, all this stuff. So you can get, for example, audible turn-by-turn directions. You want to go somewhere, you're on the road, you certainly don't want to be looking up and down from your phone and loading up Google Maps. You would just let Ford tell you where you're going. You also have nice displayed directional arrows on screen. It's right in your front console. So it's very safe when you're trying to get where you're going. And as we all know, it can be very frustrating when you're in a new place and you're trying to get to where you're going and you're unfamiliar with the roads and you get frustrated. This is all without having to purchase anything aftermarket. It's a nice integrated system. Sync also has 40 million businesses, telephone numbers, business information, directions. All that stuff is just something that you can just ask Ford. You know, let's plan a trip. Let's call up so-and-so. Let's phone the local Radio Shack. to see if they've got that cool product that I want, those batteries. You can use voice commands in your vehicle to get turn-by-turn directions as well. And there's a free Sync Destinations app, which gives you mobile access, so you can manage Sync traffic, Sync directions, information systems account, all on the go. And then you can also save destinations, so like home or office. So you have a bunch of information that's already loaded up. So your car really gets to know the kind of person you are and what you do throughout the day. Ford is... It's truly the leader of car-based technology. Ford Sync with My Ford Touch is available in the 2012 Ford Focus. And they're rolling out a lot of really interesting stuff, especially between their API and third-party apps. You're just going to see a lot of cool stuff being added to Ford vehicles more and more as the months go on. You can learn a lot more at Ford.com/technology. They have a really, really nice, robust site where they tell you all about all the stuff that's available in cars and all the stuff that they're working on. It'll knock your socks off. Again, that's Ford.com/technology. And we thank them so much for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. And now it's time for Amber's Rad or Fad.
Okay, Sarah. So I was poking around on a couple of different websites, and you know I love the site ShawneeShawnee.tv.
Yes.
I stumbled across this article about this Facebook app called Shopcade, and I had heard about it before. You kind of light bulb goes off when you've seen something a few times, and I signed up for it. Now, what Shopcade is once you use the app on Facebook, you're able to create your own virtual store, and what you're doing within the store is recommending products that already exist from some of your favorite brands. Basically, within the Facebook experience, if people buy that product that they found on your page, because maybe you sent it out on Facebook when you said that you liked it and added it to the store, you get a cut of the profit from that product. So a really interesting idea. As far as execution, I don't know. I'm just the experience is bugging me a little bit. I don't know. What do you think, Sarah?
Well, okay. So my first reaction when I loaded this up this morning was, ugh, this is the last thing I would want to be polluting any of my Facebook feeds is what other people are buying and trying to get me to buy something so that, it's almost like it feels like a Ponzi scheme, right? So that if you spread the word to enough people, end up getting some money off. But that's how a lot of these services work. And I actually went to Shopcade, and I immediately found this really interesting vendor that I end up really liking. Chad, if you take my screen, this is what's the name of this vendor? Let me just open up. It's called Not on the High Street. Okay. There's like these wall stickers. So this is just like panda with guns. I think that's really cool. I would totally put that on my wall. So I immediately was like, well, wait a second. I don't really like the idea of the service, but I actually like a lot of the stuff that's being sold. And for example, I was going to buy this and spread the word and have, and share this socially with other folks. I think there are other people who would like this artwork and would thank me for it. And certainly not everybody who I'm connected to on Facebook is going to like this sort of approach. But I saw stuff on Shopcade that actually was kind of cool. So I'm not sure. I'm a little torn between the spamminess of it, especially when you're talking about stuff that's for sale, and kind of the coolness of it because a lot of the stuff is cool and we are in the holiday season after all.
I know. And it's funny because when I read about the experience, I think it makes perfect sense. If I'm recommending products for a company and because I just love them, it makes sense that I would get a cut of it if enough people had bought it. And I think it's a very fair way to do things. However, when I put it into the Facebook experience, I feel like with all the icons and, you start with X number of points and you can customize your virtual shopping page. Maybe it's just not exactly for me in the sense that maybe it's a different demographic. I don't know. But it felt like I was going into MySpace all over again. Mm-hmm. Just from an experience standpoint. So I love the idea. In fact, there's a woman who is the founder of the company. I'm going to try to hunt her down and get her to come on the show because I think it makes perfect sense. I'd almost like to see it outside of the Facebook experience because it just gives me a bad feeling and it feels very spammy to me.
There's something about once these services go into Facebook, even my music feed, because I listen to a lot of stuff on Spotify and RDO, and it's like that's always showing up, and I know that it's showing up in all of my friends' real-time alerts that I listen to. It's like that stuff is all just irrelevant. It's a lot of the stuff is just... It just feels wrong inside of Facebook. As soon as you see it inside of Facebook, you think, oh, well, you know, they're just collecting all of our data and, you know, getting residual kickbacks or something. But, I don't know. I'm torn. I don't know if you want to call it rad or fad. I think it's fad just because I'm probably never going to buy anything this way. But I do think that some of their products are cool. Certainly some of the vendors that they've hooked up with that they're featuring.
Yeah, I think... I'm so torn, Sarah. I think it's really split down the middle for me, too. I think it's a rad idea, but in execution, I'm going to give it kind of a fad. Again, I think it would have a better chance maybe outside of the Facebook experience, but maybe not. You know, who knows? So can we have like 50-50 for now? Is that unfair to do? I just feel like I don't know.
We don't know. Well, you know what we can do? We can say that we choose... We can choose a no vote, and maybe if we can get the Shopcade CEO on the show at a later date, and we have a little bit better of an idea of what their approach is, maybe it'll sway us one way or another.
That sounds like a plan. I think we should do that.
Okay, let's do that.
All right, sounds good.
That's such a cop out, by the way.
I know,
but it's not to hard. Vote, but.
I know. This is a tough one, though, right? Because this could be the future, right? Like, in terms of, I'm sure other services like this will exist. It just, this one in particular does feel spammy. So I don't know if we want to totally give it the big two thumbs up fad title.
Absolutely. All right, Shopcade, we will reserve judgment for a later date, but we'll definitely revisit it because it's, you know, when you get into shopping and stuff, it's certainly something that I want to recommend if I really think it's worth our recommendation. Speaking of worth the recommendation, but that actually has nothing to do with the fact that our show is ending. I just couldn't find a cool segue to round out the show. Sorry, Amber, I failed you.
It's okay, Sarah. You could have said, like, speaking of recommendations, don't forget to watch next week.
See? You should be doing this. Yes,
not
that's
so
right.
much, Sarah. I'm glad that you're in the chair. Trust me. Yes, of course. Watch next week, and even though our schedule might be a little weird in December, lots of great shows, and hopefully we'll get that holiday show together.
Absolutely. So I think Amber, you and I are scheduled to actually shoot our next episode this coming Friday. So for live viewers, it'll be Friday immediately following TNT. But for anybody who's subscribing and is watching our show on demand, it doesn't really matter because we'll push out the show almost exactly on the same day that we would normally. So don't worry about the live schedule if you're watching it after the fact. But certainly if you want to tune in live, tune in right after TNT on Friday. Certainly watch TNT as well. That's just our lead-in where it isn't normally. But of course, normally Mondays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific. And the website is twit.tv/TSH for all of our, not only our past shows, but show notes and links that we mentioned and Amber's Rad or Fad and comments from like-minded community members. Members and so on and so forth. And of course, you can also follow us and find our show on iTunes as well. Okay, Amber, that's it for us. Thank you so
All
much
right,
for
Sarah.
Watching, everybody, and I'll see you later in the week.
See you later. Thanks for watching.
Bye, everybody.